Today's Journey to Wellness in Indian Country is made possible by the University of Minnesota Medical School Duluth Campus, educating medical students dedicated to serving rural Minnesota and American Indian Alaska Native communities. Jeremy Neville Sorrell of Mending the Sacred Hoop joins us in our studios this morning. He is the training and resource director there, and he just celebrated 25 years at Mending the Sacred Hoop by announcing he's going to take another gig. So what's that about, Jeremy? First, I was all concerned. I said, please don't tell me that you're moving. And you said, no, and I'll still be halftime at Mending the Sacred Hoop. And after I breathed a sigh of relief, now I said, okay, well, then you're allowed to take the new job. One of the things that I asked you, just as I was trying to get a little bit of a sense of a foundation of this, are there a lot of Native men who are working to address this issue in their communities? When you start to talk about issues of trying to deal in a culturally sensitive way with violence against women and this sort of thing, the last thing you need is another well-intentioned European, coming in. And it sounds like, yes, there are, but there are not a lot of you. So talk a little bit about the new job and how this whole thing developed sort of in context.
Well, good morning, Lisa. Thank you for having me again. I'm really excited about this project, and it goes in right along the whole concept with this theme you're doing around Native wellness, right? You know, we got to have these healthy, strong communities, and one of these areas that we've been working on the last couple of years is how do we bring men back to that really strong, healthy role? Because we've just been allowed to kind of slide along and go along and not really be part of the problem. Meanwhile, 25 years with Mending the Sacred Hoop, we concentrated on victim services mostly. And so there's this big changing trend around engaging men and youth and preventing domestic violence, sexual violence. And really a lot of it is around awareness, bringing awareness to the issues, then also being self-aware around your actions, your behaviors, and beliefs. So we're doing that on the front end and as well as the back end now with doing this coalition work that I'll be transitioning into, where we're doing the prevention side, and then we're going to do the batters intervention side about doing certification standards and creating curricula for people to have Native-specific materials.
So one of the things that you mentioned is that it's frequently difficult for tribes to have their own local programs because there are a lot of certification rules and this, that, and the next thing. And although we've learned on this program that this is really a shock, but occasionally there are problems with tribes trying to deal with state and national infrastructures. Really? This is my surprised face.
They have a lot of different states have different issues because some state standards for batters intervention will say you need to be a non-governmental entity. And tribes, all of their programs that are run are inherently governmental entities because it's the tribal government, it's a sovereign government, a sovereign nation. So everything is government run. So that's some of the conflict. That's the same thing with some advocacy programs trying to be members of state coalitions that are tribal because of non-governmental organizations. So that's part of it. A large portion is the training, the ability to get training and the capacity to facilitate and identifying people to do groups and run groups. And the largest obstacle for most of the individuals is that in order to be a certified program to have people court-ordered two-year groups is that you have to observe groups for 52 weeks. So if you live out in the middle of the country, two and a half hours away from the closest group to where you can get trained in, going there once a week for a year is really difficult.
Well, if you were in Red Lake or White Earth or even, any of the northern tribes here and the closest training was the cities, that's really going to be a difficult thing to manage.
Yeah, and we're relatively close in Minnesota.
Right.
And it's still a big distance, right?
Right.
Can you imagine me in the middle of Arizona? I got to go to Phoenix, and I'm way up in Window Rock, 3.5 hours away.
Exactly. And then I'll do this once a week because, sweet, why not? Of course. Yeah, exactly. But are you finding that as you work And you do a lot of the training of the trainers. Do you find that more and more men are wanting to step up and take responsibility for their role in this issue, which obviously we've talked a lot about on Northland Morning, is a complicated issue of some of the barriers and the struggles that tribes are facing, but that more and more men are saying, I want to try to do something about it?
Yes. That's going to be one of the I think, one of the funner portions of this project coming up, because I have a whole matrix laid out on how to help people get trained and build their capacity, because over the years it's been haphazard, right? We find the ones, this is what a lot of communities do actually, they'll find the one guy who's a standout and say, that's going to be our guy. And they put all their effort and energy into the individual, and they may not work out. Or they may not look at, so this person is a good person in the community, but they don't understand the work and can't articulate it. Or they may understand the purpose of it, but still make sexist jokes, right? Things like that here and there.
Sure.
And so this whole training, and this is some of the work that's happened over the last few years of working on engaging men projects through other organizations, where you have people who show up and they're involved, but then they only go so far, right? Or they reach a point where they have some resistance, and then they backtrack. Like someone, there's one guy who had, throughout this process, that this project that we're working on within Minnesota, it was all of us around sexual violence prevention. And through that project, all of us disclosed throughout the first year and a half of it, somewhere along the line, that we're all sexually abused. And so that took a, that made this project shift a little bit internally with the way people are thinking and everything else. And so it was engaging men and youth to prevent violence. And so these other men who were new to it really got on this track of preventing violence, but they forgot the rest of the project name is to address violence against women. And so they want to go into their own victimization.
Sure.
And that's part of that struggle, right? Where someone hasn't gotten to that healing point themselves in order to move forward and move past and say, how do I then change this to help address violence against women?
One of the things that, in my opinion, you said, I wish we could have done this 10 years ago, because this idea for this nonprofit, you said, has been at least 10 years in the making. And you said, I wish I could have done this 10 years ago. And my sense is that you're thinking about all of the men that you could have reached, all the trainers you could have trained. Incidentally, I guess we didn't even identify the new job. You're going to be the director of the National Native Coalition of Men's Programs, and that's going to be doing prevention and intervention work, and basically by training, by developing curriculum and training trainers.
Yes.
Okay. In my humble opinion, I wonder if you would have made all of the contacts, had all of the experiences that you would have needed 10 years ago in order to be able to step back and see the big picture the way you can now. Because now you have so much knowledge and wisdom from all of these different experiences that you've had that you can sort of look at the whole thing very clearly and see, this is what's needed and this is the way everything interacts with everything else and this is the way it ought to be organized.
It would have been really nice to have a head start in a way, or get portions out. So we're doing two different things, prevention and intervention at the same time. 10 years ago, we start having the conversation about organizing a training around Native Batterers Intervention Program, curricular development certification. And if we would have had that developed, that part could have been, fine-tuned, shaped up a little bit. So as the sweeping trend around the prevention side, as we get into the engaging men and youth portion, then we could have had like fresh energy and a different design and take on that. Because one of the things that's really exciting about the engaging men and youth work is that it broadens this scope of work. And it also revitalizes Batterers Intervention, because that the typical model that came around in the 80s and 90s, it's on its way out. And people are rethinking, redesigning. Why is the expertise around men in the community, the handful of guys who work with batterers, but yet they only work with like a group of men on weeknights, right? There's no expertise in the community. So what's happening with Batterers Intervention is a lot of the men who have the expertise and knowledge around these issues are, you know, stuck working with the offenders. And so they're changing with the prevention side, where a lot of batterers intervention program models are going outside and to do community awareness. You have the people have the knowledge and skills and everything else, and so they're spreading that, and it's changing the way people are starting to look at, you know, both in Native and non-Native communities, of how we do something that's a little bit different and not just waiting for someone to get caught.
Okay, so for example, if I'm understanding, these trainers sit in a meeting with offenders, they work with offenders, they hear the stories, then they're in a position to go out knowing these are the attitudes that perhaps these men developed that got them into trouble. These are the roads that these men went down that got them into trouble. And then they can go out and they can talk to, civic organizations. Yes. They can talk to school groups and say to kids, hey, here's a different way of looking at the world.
Yep.
And this one's going to serve you a little bit better in the long run.
And the cool thing is we're bringing our traditions back, our different traditions back into a way that we teach that role and responsibility. So the Office on Violence Against Women in 2016 and 2017 sponsored some roundtables on looking at Native men's and beliefs around violence against women. And there was 40 of us each time who came together. And we start talking about commonalities and things like that and say, what are some of our traditions and how do we come together? And this was really the kickoff for this is where the energy came from. Let's do this coalition, get it together, and really start working towards it. Was 2016, because we had these thoughts, these conversations. When these other guys were out, we're like, this is great. We finally have a spot to gather and have conversation with one another, because we're all scattered in separate parts of the country. And we each have our own individual teachings and different roles to bring back. And one of the cool things that we talked about was two things that were common to all of us Native men across the country. One of them was around our role as firekeepers. So we all have these gender roles. So women with water, men with fire. And that has different teachings that go with it. So every Native man has an upbringing into being a firekeeper. And so there's responsibility and all these other things that go with it, right? And then the other part that we all were common is our role as uncles. And so we're bringing that back, and the traditional role of an uncle in the family is around a disciplinarian. So you got the education disciplinarian. Your auntie and uncle roles in traditional family were those who did a lot of the teaching of your children. And so that parent-child bond was always never to be broken and always unconditional love. And so that's your immediate job as a parent, and then your siblings, brothers and sisters.
Oh, so you get to be the good cop as the parent.
All the time, right?
And the uncle and aunt get to be the bad. Did you do your homework? Let me check your homework. No, you're not going out tonight. You're going to stay in until the grades go up. Oh, I'm loving this.
Wouldn't that be fun to reincorporate it that way with nowadays traditions, right? Like, you get them, do your chores and brush your teeth.
Yeah, exactly. I'm liking this. I think this is great. But to have that kind of support as a single parent, the first time someone said to my daughter in front of me, excuse me, did you hear what your mom said? You need to get that done now.
Yep.
For the first time to have that backup was incalculable to me as a single parent. And for families, especially perhaps families that are struggling with a lot of everything else, to have that backup in terms of helping to keep the kid, you know, on task. I mean, that's just immeasurable. That's incredible.
You just think of how many times we laugh about it. How many times in our families did we have that uncle who always kind of roughed us up a little bit, harassed us, teased us, right? Like, corrected your behavior. When you got on the line and messed up, like, we got busted for doing graffiti back when I was 14, me and my cousin, and we never heard the end of it, right? Our parents never had to say anything afterwards. It was our aunties and uncles and teasing us. We had to pay $100 restitution for, you know, the paint, repainting this door. And they were like, ooh, you could have got a gold-painted marker for that. Ooh, you could have done that. We did not hear the end of it for the rest of the summer.
Right.
And you know, and it was that kind of, it was that way of teasing. And also, you got a little bit of shaming.
And yet, And yet in this instance, here you are and you're laughing about it and you are remembering that as love. Uh-huh. At the time, I'm sure it didn't feel quite like that. But I mean, we tend to be so concerned about hurting kids' feelings and we don't want to shame them. We don't want to whatever. To embarrass a kid is different from shaming a kid or from saying, this was a bad thing. Not you're a bad person, but this was a bad thing to do, Jeremy. We don't act like that.
Exactly. And so it was more about the, you know, everything, that attention, big, you know, the way it's like, okay, I'm not going to do that again, right? And so, or not get busted.
Well, and then you show up and you say, hey, everybody, I am going to be the national director for this organization. And they go, are you still doing graffiti? I mean, This is what keeps you real, is when your family keeps you real.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the place where you go for the love of who you are. But I mean, that when your family keeps you real and keeps you grounded.
Yeah. And I have, you know, uncles that both were very good and some that battered their partners as well. And so you think of that role modeling, right? And all of that comes with that job as being an uncle. And then think of all of your friends that you have that you say to your kids, that's your auntie or your uncle, right?
Sure.
We all have that family connection in some sort of way, and that connection to an auntie or uncle is very different for us as kids too. We look up to them very different, and they have a different role back to us. And so when you're out in the community, when a kid calls you auntie or uncle and they're not biologically related, that's a special connection you have to the community, right? You know, people who do the public speaking, who go speaking schools. One of the guys I'm working with, he's always being called Uncle Greg because he has no kids of his own, but he's like uncle to all the kids out in the community because he does this type of work. He does the prevention work, and people look up to them in that special sort of way.
And that kind of, those kinds of relationships, I would think, are going to be really healing to any person who's struggling with anything.
Right.
And a man, perhaps, who's struggling with violence issues is maybe going to think twice before he does anything to jeopardize that special respect and the view of himself that he sees in the eyes of these kids.
Yes.
You travel a lot doing training, obviously, in your work for Mending the Sacred Hoop. And so now you're going to be doing your traveling as the director of this coalition. You're still going to be here part-time. What are you going to be continuing to do here at Mending the Sacred Hoop?
Probably the training still. I'll be gone all the time with that training. Most likely the training aspects and doing a lot of this education and material development and continue that role as it adds on with building and transitioning because we're still starting and, you know, with the coalition work and still grant writing. We got a small grant from the Novo Foundation that got us started and pays for our infrastructure costs and things like that. And so we're starting to build and do more work. And so that part's going to be really nice. I still get to go out and see people and hang out with Mending the Sacred Hoop. So it's one of these transitions. It's kind of, you know, it's one of those things you think is odd being at somewhere for so long and then to abruptly leave and be like, but wait a minute, I still have plans, right?
Yeah, you've got a lot of stuff you still need to do.
There's a lot of irons in the fire still with that job after 25 years. And so I'm hoping I'll finish up a few more.
That is fantastic. I'm so glad that we get to keep you, and I'm so glad that you're also taking this next step and working on this coalition. So we'll stay in touch and see what's going on, and I'm glad you're still here, and congratulations on the new gig, hey?
Thank you.
Jeremy Neville Sorrell, our guest in the studio this morning. He's the Training and Resource Director at Mending the Sacred Hoop here in town, and he has also been named the Director of the National Native Coalition of Men's Programs, and he'll be working on developing curriculum and doing prevention and intervention work and training. Journey to Wellness in Indian Country was made possible by the University of Minnesota Medical School, Duluth Campus, a national leader in improving health care access and outcomes in rural Minnesota and American Indian, Alaska Native communities.